It's great to see you. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you, Dave Groon?
I'm doing good. Hey, so this week, we're picking up. Oh, I wanted to ask you, did your daughter decide on a school, or is she's just begun the
journey?
She's
a junior.
Right. You were really undecided on how old she was last time.
I know.
Okay. So she's just begun the process.
Yeah, she's just starting. We're going to go see another one next weekend, something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So this weekend, in the third week of a series, we call it Easter Eggs. And it's been cool that people across the board have learned what an Easter egg is.
Yeah.
When I asked you out of the gate, you were like, of course I know what it is.
Yeah. I can't remember if I said this last week, but I've been surprised how many people said, I never heard of that before.
Yeah. I hadn't until we did this series. I think I said that. But yeah, it's been shocking. It's just cool. It's been fun. This past week, we did a video clip in our weekend message that actually wasn't an Easter egg.
Yeah.
It's a theme, and we're actually doing the same thing next week.
Yeah. Well, the bumper is, I don't know if everybody knows that's what we call that little video that plays before the sermon, but that in that video, that's full of true Easter eggs.
Right.
And so in the message, it's been helpful to use some other video clips that are still, interesting movie. I know that movie, but they go a little bit, they bring out a different element than just purely Easter egg.
Right. I think that's good. They bring out a theme. Yeah. So this week, next week, they're themes, not necessarily an Easter egg. And this week, the Easter egg was actually buried in Psalm 41. The theme that is throughout God's story is the theme of betrayal, and that's the theme of the Lion King. So we started with a clip in the Lion King, but here's the thing. Jesus's betrayal was no accident, but part of God's redemptive plan, because Jesus's betrayal set in motion the greatest act of redemption in history. And it is interesting to me that the idea of betrayal isn't just a biblical theme, but it's also just a general human story theme. And so as you think about betrayal, is there a time in your life where you feel like you were betrayed? Or it's harder to say there was a time in my life when I betrayed someone.
Oh.
That one is no fun.
Yeah, I'd have to really... If I did that, I think I've tried to...
rectify it, right?
Yeah, or suppress it, and I don't remember it.
Pretend like it never happened. So when you hear betrayal, is there a time in your life where you feel like you were betrayed?
I don't think there's like a, oh, that's the betrayal moment. I don't feel like there's been a big, or like a major moment like that. Maybe little things.
Yeah, well, see, little things. Because often I think we talked about the difference between biblical betrayal and the modern idea of betrayal this past weekend. And the modern idea of betrayal is just in a relationship, somebody did me dirty. Like they shared something they shouldn't have shared. I told somebody something and it was in confidence, and they told somebody else. It's just a little bit, not maybe less hurtful, but it's really hard to get the idea of a relational covenant with another person that person betrayed outside of marriage.
Yeah.
Right. And that's because the image that the Bible uses is the marriage relationship throughout God's story. And when it comes to betrayal, God says the children of Israel betrayed him because they acted like the cheater.
The unfaithful ones.
Yeah. The unfaithful.
Yeah.
I wanted to avoid saying the word. I was hoping right there you were going to fill the word for me, but you wouldn't do it. So that's okay. But Jesus's betrayal wasn't a disruption. It was the door to redemption. And I think that's really hard for us, and maybe even in relationships. So is there a time, you've shared before that maybe in your first job that they let you go.
Yeah.
Did that feel good? How'd that feel?
Oh, no, it did not feel good. But I was like, yeah, okay, you're right. That's on me. You know, it wasn't warm. Yeah. It wasn't like I didn't leave there thinking I got dirty here, you know. Hammered. I got wrong. No, I was like, yeah, they're right. It's time for me to go. it was hard to argue with that, you know.
I'm sorry, that made me laugh too hard.
But it's reality. It's reality.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, maybe at the time I couldn't say that. Maybe even then I could, but I definitely can now. So it's harder for me to. Do you have one? Do you like? Not. I'm not. Yeah, maybe not necessarily like. Oh, earth shattering life.
But. Yeah.
Or maybe you have that too.
Yeah. If I was going to unpack my story, there's some significant betrayal moments, like not insignificant. I would have as much reason to have walked away from the church as anybody's story I've ever heard, apart from abuse. I was not physically or sexually abused in the church. Uh-huh. And I put that in another category of betrayal.
Sure.
But apart from that, I've never heard anybody say a story of church hurt that I would say, oh, that was greater than what I experienced. Yeah. And not just once, but multiple times in the sense of promises were made, guarantees are made within a short matter of time. That promise is rescinded and you feel like you were just literally sacrificed.
Yeah.
And that's really difficult. Or you're leading in a local church and you're pouring your heart out about what God is teaching you, what God is showing you. I think I've even shared from the stage here, you know, sharing about one of the things that God showed me was I was angry with him. And I shared that with the church at the time. It's none of this is here. And it was one of those moments where I found out later that the guy didn't even wait like a week. It was on a Sunday morning. And by Sunday night, the elders had a letter from a gentleman in our church saying that they should fire me because there was something wrong with me that I could possibly be angry with God. And it wasn't even like, hey, I'm really mad at God right now. And I'm not sure this whole Bible thing is true. It was literally God showed me I was angry at him and talked about how he led me through healing in that.
Yeah, a healthy thing.
Yeah, really super healthy. And this guy's like, how could you possibly be angry at God? I'm like, well, I don't know. I think you got some anger issues in there. And if we dig the roots, if we dig the roots of our anger issues, I do believe, or a lot of our issues, if we really allow ourselves to be honest, we peel back the layers and we end up discovering we feel like maybe God has done us dirty in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And I would say especially for people who are in ministry. So yeah, I have lots of them. And this is why I would say, I was talking with a friend not long ago about it and just telling him more of my story. He's like, wow, I never had an idea. Like there's so many layers to it. There's layers on top of layers. But this is why I would say, if it hadn't been for the supernatural intervention of God in bringing healing, that there's no way I would be doing what I do now. There's no way.
Yeah.
You know, if it was just up to me and getting over it, it just required a supernatural redemption of God to go, wait, that these people, they aren't the church.
Yeah,
they're in the church.
Right.
But they're not the church. And Jesus has said the church is the hope of the world, right? Like, so.
And I think pretty much everybody has to, if you're going to be deeply in, like, if you're going to be in deep relationship with people in a church body, who you're going to be in deep relationship with other believers and more than just your four favorite people, but the body of other believers in a church, whether it's a church of 30 people or 3,000. But if you're going to do that over a long period of time, you are going to experience hurt. Maybe you'd call it betrayal, but you're going to experience hurt and offense from those people. And I think what you're describing, like getting to the point of going, those people did that. Those people are part of the church, but they are not the church. That is not what the church is. That injurious thing, the thing that hurt me, is not the church. Until you can get to that point, I don't think it's possible to go, because everybody will eventually have you know, I'm doing air quotes, church hurt, because there's humans in it.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, like, what you're describing, I think, is so important to, you have to get there. You have to come to that perspective, or I think everyone would be sane and smart to say, I'm just not going to be part of a church anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just feel like God gave me that, a gift of that really early on, where I was able to distinguish between people who are part of a church and the church.
Yeah.
And it really was scripture, the Holy Spirit, scripture to go, wait, the church is a gathering. It's a group of people. And in any group of people, there could be a person mm-hmm. who does hurtful things.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the church,
yeah.
like I'm not going to be part of the church anymore because this injurious thing happened.
Yeah.
Right? And I could tie it back to my pre-ministry job experience, right? Uh-huh. I didn't have a choice to leave the organization, but did I feel like I was done dirty by one of my supervisors? Yeah. Was it based not on facts and performance? Was it based on personal opinion and his personal views and desires? Yeah. And in the midst of that, you're like, whoa, dude, you don't even know me.
Yeah.
Like, how are you doing that to me?
Yeah.
Right. And all that to say, along the way, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, but none of the, I mean, that reality of having the right perspective about that, whether it's in the church or outside the church, doesn't negate the real pain of a hurt like that, specifically of betrayal, because betrayal is, there's always a relationship. There's always, you know, that injury comes out of out of a relationship. And even having a right perspective, big picture, that's not the church, that's a person in the church, it's still betrayal, and betrayal is still painful.
Super. Yeah. It's always painful.
Yeah.
And that's a great point. And I'll triple down on it, right?
Yeah.
Yes. And this is what I would say. And I do believe, like in all of those, if we get really honest, something I said already, if you start tracing it back and you start uncovering things, I do think this is something that God showed me along the way. If I was able to trace it back, so I felt like in the end, Jesus, God, however you want to say it, that he could have prevented that hurt or made it go a different way, that I would somehow make him the origin of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I don't go back and deal with Jesus making me whole uh-huh. before I feel like I can be whole with another person, that I'm never going to get there. And so I feel like that was a gift that he gave me along the way to go like, okay, wait, see, I'm going to show you. You think that I did this to you. Let's reconcile that. Then I could be reconciled with another person. And I want to clarify, you get a great chance this past weekend to talk about it. But when you're reconciling with another person, I have multiple examples where I believe the relationships are reconciled, but the relationships are radically different or non-existent.
Yeah.
And I believe that's okay.
Like, yeah.
Like, okay, one of them in particular, there was a guy a number of years later that there was no reason to approach him and talk about forgiveness. I mean, he would have said, hey, I didn't do anything wrong, I think, right? But in the end, it took years to wrestle through forgiveness, restoration, wholeness. And I was at a conference, ran into the guy, and one of the gifts I believe God gave me was there wasn't any kind of emotion tied to it.
Yeah.
Like I knew like, okay, I really, like in my brain, I thought I had forgiven this guy.
Uh-huh.
Like I think I'm good.
Yeah.
And for God to give me that moment.
That was the real test or the real proof of it.
Proof.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like confirmation.
Yeah.
And there was freedom in that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's true. What I think is true is true. And I feel like if I ran into him any place now, it could be like, I think it would be really awkward for him, but uh-huh. it wouldn't be awkward at all for me because uh-huh. I know that I'm at peace with all of it.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be where I am today without it.
That's an important thing I wouldn't be where I am today without it. That's an important thing for people to get about all this betrayal thing and some of the questions we get at in Live It Out this week, and not way into it, but that concept of forgiveness and what does forgiveness mean? It's just important for people to remember it doesn't mean, reconciliation doesn't mean restoration of relationship. It doesn't mean going back to the same place where we were. Sometimes it means there's something's been severed that is not going to be tied back together, you know?
Right. In particular, if you are the betrayer.
Yeah.
You know, if you are the betrayer, I think sometimes, like, we see this, right? We're in church life. We see marriages that hit the rocks, and one spouse violates a covenant in some way, shape, or form, mm-hmm. Whether that's through an affair or violating it through abuse, mm-hmm. or violating it through, whether that's physical, emotional, whatever it may be. And then there's an expectation by the betrayer that that person would then go, well, see, you have to forgive me because the Bible says, sure. you have to forgive me. And now you're just back into the cycle of abuse. Like, no, like, I'm going to forgive you. But that doesn't mean there's not real consequences. Mm-hmm. And our reconciliation doesn't mean restoration of what once was.
Right.
And we got to make sure, I think, as people who may have betrayed a person, that we don't feel like we have any right to dictate what reconciliation looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? And I think that's just important to have in mind when you think about, because Live It Out's going to take us to, what about when you've been betrayed? How do you respond to that? And I don't want people to put on themselves a impossible, unrealistic, unbiblical standard of, okay, it means I just have to, I'm obligated in forgiveness to then go back to the way things were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think hopefully, we didn't have a great chance this week to unwind all the tentacles that are in this area or could be for sure. a person. And so this is an area where I would suggest that if this is an area where you're trying to wrestle, I would highly recommend counseling.
Yeah.
Highly recommend it. That it's something wisdom would say that if I'm still trying to unwind and unpack these things, that I could use counsel, wise counsel, mm-hmm. and what that looks like for me. And so we would highly recommend that if you're trying to sort through some stuff,
yeah.
man, get a perspective from another human.
Yeah.
And the safest space to do that would be with a counselor.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a good example too of, you know, just the way our weekend messages go. This message was about betrayal, but it wasn't a message on betrayal and how you deal with betrayal. That's not primarily what it was. It was primarily about what God did through Jesus and how he was betrayed, you know?
Yeah.
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 But there's still lots more.
Yeah. Just that word brings up a lot of stuff right. in us, right? We would have a hard time disconnecting our personal story from the fact that Jesus was betrayed before he went to the cross, right? I mean, that's a hard thing for us. And so there is this, and we did draw this distinction between the idea of biblical betrayal and modern betrayal this past weekend. Like, okay, well, there's a difference, but it doesn't mean that betrayal with a friend who told a secret that you had shared with them isn't extremely painful, isn't extremely difficult, but we do believe Jesus can bring redemption to your heart and mind in that.
Yeah.
Although it may change the nature of your relationship.
Yeah.
You may never again entrust that person with that level of information in
right.
your world.
Right.
That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is allowing Jesus to bring wholeness and restoration into your heart and mind. And then also, I think it's way easier just to say, hey, I was betrayed. But in your story, recognizing those places and spaces where at least people would feel like you betrayed them. Like, I would look at my story and say, I don't know that I ever betrayed a person. But I'm quite certain, as a friend of ours says, that I am the villain in somebody's story.
Yeah, right.
In multiple people's mm-hmm. story, I am the villain.
Right. Even though, if I don't know it.
Yeah. Even though their version of events isn't my version of events, uh-huh. even though there was a story behind the story, I know that I know in other people's story, I am a villain. And I think that's hard to wrestle through and be honest about.
Yeah.
And so I try to do that. I try and be like, okay, in that instance, yeah, I would say that that person's perception is valid, but also be honest enough to say that person is misguided in their perception because sure. I know the story behind the story.
Sure.
Right. That takes us to something we don't normally do. And what we're going to do is something a little bit different.
Okay.
We don't normally in this podcast, we talk about live it out ideas and what does it look like to put the Bible into practice, really oriented around the live it out guide. But what we don't often do is chase rabbits down holes where we don't usually have time to go on the weekend.
The cutting room floor.
Yeah.
That's what sometimes people call it. You know, I've just heard, you know, that's
you've heard that phrase.
Yeah. That's what sometimes people do is like, oh, this is what we do. What couldn't we squeeze into the sermon? We'll squeeze the rest in here. Yeah. Oh, that's great. But it's not usually what we do.
No, not usually what we do. And in this case, it's a combination of time, the reality of time, and to be able to give something the time that it would need to have. And just even by chasing it a little bit, sometimes maybe you would cause more confusion than you would be helpful. And so it gives us a little bit of time. We have time in this space.
Okay.
Like one of the things, like when we started the podcast, I think it was back when we were going through What's the Bible, and it was an opportunity for people to ask questions, and we talked about those questions, and it was like, okay, well, maybe out of that, maybe we'll change this a little bit, and we've been through a couple iterations. And that's when we changed it to the Live It Out podcast, basically saying, hey, it's a way for us to talk about, hey, we tell people to live it out, but how do we do that? So this is one of those things that I would say is informational, but can be transformational as we look at God's story. And so when it came to Easter and the theme of betrayal, I think most followers of Jesus are familiar with Judas's story.
Mm-hmm.
Fair assumption?
Yeah, yeah. He's a familiar character, and even some of the details.
So we would be able to say, okay, yeah, absolutely. Most followers of Jesus would be able to say, Jesus went to the cross. One of the factors that played out in the story was betrayal. And okay, great. Jesus was betrayed. Awesome. What difference does that make in my life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that as we go through God's story is we talk a lot about chasing threads. And there's a name for that. It's one of your favorite names, Tim. What kind of theology?
Biblical theology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the
biblical.
It's the idea of following a storyline. And I would say before this week, I hadn't really given it full thought. I hadn't really contemplated the theme of betrayal.
Okay.
It's not something I spend a lot of time thinking about. Is that something you spend a lot of time thinking about?
No. Definitely not.
No. I mean, even when it comes to Judas, and
right.
This is why I would say from the perspective of, that was terrible of Judas. How could he possibly? How could he possibly have been that close to Jesus and stealing out of the money bags and then at the end give him over? How could he possibly?
Right.
Right? That's always been my approach.
Yes. And when we were in sermon meeting last week, I can remember just thinking out loud. It was even sort of the first time that I was considering it, maybe, was like, huh. Jesus didn't have to get arrested via betrayal. You know, there's lots of other ways to catch somebody. It didn't have to be, you know, he showed up in public plenty of times. There could have been some way they could have, you know, followed him, nabbed him, right? And so I just, because up to that point, I never really thought about, oh, so why betrayal?
Yeah.
Just, you know? I just hadn't thought about it before.
Yeah, I remember you saying that. I'm like, of course. You said it in sermon meeting. I'm like, yeah, it could have been anyway. It could have been anyway. And then I spent a little bit more time chasing a rabbit down the hole. And I would still say, yeah, it could have been anyway. It could have gone down anyway. But now I would add a but to that. But of course it was betrayal.
Right.
Right? And so as we look back in God's story, we got to touch just on the surface this weekend. As it begins in Genesis 3, as you have Adam and Eve, who ultimately the first sin is a betrayal. That there's the serpent who later through the New Testament, at the time, the New Testament authors connect the serpent to the Satan figure in Scripture. And it's a betrayal of relationship. It's not just they were disobedient to God. It's the fact that they betrayed the relationship with God by trusting the accuser of God over God himself.
Yeah.
And so they enter into a relational fracture rooted in mistrust. Like there's this broken relationship because they chose to believe the serpent over God. And even though, you know, what they were pursuing was something that we would say the knowledge of good and evil, this is a good thing. But apart from God, it was betrayal. They betrayed their relationship with God over the pursuit of something else.
Yeah.
And so we would say, I mean, I would always say that there was relational fracture. The relationship changed between Adam and Eve and God in the garden. So that begins the story. And then from there, this week, we're like, okay, hey, there's the Genesis 3 rupture. And so then as John is writing about what happens leading up to the cross, as he's writing about the upper room and what's going on right there, he's really careful to make sure that he includes Jesus quoting Psalm 41.
Mm-hmm.
And in Psalm 41, there in the middle of that, that's where we said there's a little Easter egg right in the middle of Psalm 41, where David writes, "Even my close friend in whom I trusted, who ate my bread, has lifted his heel against me." And so while there's a story you'll get to do and live it out this week that most people would say David is likely referring to is revealed in 2 Samuel chapters 15 through 17, that there's a real story that he's referring to. But in the midst of that, what we see is Jesus is connecting his story and about what's going to go on to David's story, and he connects his identity. We talked about this weekend. He's connecting his identity to being this future one of the line of David. But there's an interesting little thing that happened before that, back in Psalm 41 in verse 8. And this is what we didn't get to talk about. It says that there's a deadly thing. And the translation, and was reading a commentary by James Hamilton on Psalms, which it's a biblical theology commentary on Psalms that came out a couple years ago from James Hamilton. Highly recommend it. And he makes the point that every English translation kind of cloaks over something that's going on right there, because they do it right. I mean, they talk about, they give an accurate meaning to what the text is meaning, while maybe the language cloaks something. Mm-hmm. And it's the phrase that there's a deadly thing that has happened. And the literal translation is a thing of Belial. And this word, Belial, that at that time, it's talking about lawlessness, rebellion, that kind of thing. But by the time we get to the New Testament, Paul in particular is using this term, Belial, as connecting it to the demonic, and in particular as a name for the Satan in Scripture. And so it's interesting that in the verse before, the deadly thing that's happening, the thing that's going on is a thing of Belial. And then when we come to how John is telling the story, he makes it explicitly clear that when it comes to Judas, that Judas wasn't acting alone. And there's the Satan entered him.
Yeah. Right?
I think the Satan entered him.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, what we see is this tie to the cosmic battle that has been going on, that was happening in Genesis 3, that does appear to be beneath the surface all the way to the cross. And that's why I would go, of course it was going to be betrayal, because the original sin that Jesus is going to the cross for is betrayal. It was rebellion, right? But the rebellion through this broken relational covenant that now is played out through Judas. And it's played out in a real way that was part of the story that's far bigger than just Jesus went to the cross for you and me. He did, okay? And that's not small. Mm-hmm. But in the end, there is a greater cosmic battle that was reaching its completion in that.
Yeah. And just that it's... I think I told you this. I was looking at Psalm 41 in my Bible last week, and I had a note that I don't know where I got it from somewhere. I must have been studying Psalm 41, and I had written that where at verse 8, where it says a deadly thing in the ESV, I just written that. What's the name?
Belial.
Yeah, Belial. But I had written it in there. And so I must have picked that up somewhere, but it didn't make any sense to me. It's just like, oh, that's the term. So it's a Satan-y thing, you know, a deadly thing it didn't really click for me that's just an odd thing about Psalm 41. But then when you see, and this is what you're saying, when you see it quoted by John, it's like, oh, this is when Satan entered Judas. That's a Satan thing. You know, this is a Satan thing going on.
Yeah.
And there was like I guess it's another kind of Easter egg, this little thing pointing to that back in Psalm 41. And I was like, oh, this isn't describing necessarily what feels like a Satan thing that happened in David's life.
Yeah.
But it's there. And it kind of comes out when you see it in the New Testament.
So, there's a link in David's story. Okay, I just watched a little YouTube short on an Old Testament professor saying that in Bible translation, in both directions, that sometimes it can be unhelpful in a Bible translation if they translate something too literally, we miss the meaning. And at other times, if they don't, they give us the meaning and they don't give us the word, we end up missing out. So it's Bible translators are walking a very narrow path in this idea of, do I give people the meaning behind him, or do I give the word behind it? It's not an easy task. I'll just say that. But this is one of those instances in Psalm 41, verse 8, where if you were going to say a thing of Belial, it links, it's linking even David's betrayal with spiritual darkness, not just human weakness. It's aligning David's suffering with this broader cosmic conflict that's going on. And if we just looked at David's story, if you just read 2 Samuel 15 through 17, we might not understand it that way, but it's super cool when you're going, it's pretty apparent John saw it that way. John, it does appear that John saw it that way. And then Jesus is the one who quotes Psalm 41. And it does appear that Jesus saw it that way, because certainly he knows what's coming before. And then the fact, this is where you go like, okay, does this really matter? The fact that Satan enters Judas is not a random little anecdote, little fact dropped in there. It makes sense when we understand Psalm 41, verse 8, when we understand that there's already a spiritual aspect that's going on, that there was a cosmic conflict that was playing out, that is all tied together. And then that ties even further. We didn't have a chance to even begin to talk about it, but it ties into Ezekiel and the way that Ezekiel talks about the children of Israel, their rebellion against God as betrayal, and that then becomes restored through a new heart, a new spirit, it's going to happen, that you're going to become a new people. You're going to go from being a people of rebellion to a new people.
Yeah.
And now you're like, oh, that you have the Genesis 3 story that creates the problem. It's a problem that David experienced, and it's something that Ezekiel points towards the solution, and it's something that is only going to reach its conclusion with Jesus being betrayed, going to the cross. Uh-huh. And so while God could have done it anyway.
Yeah.
Of course it was betrayal.
Yeah.
Of course.
Right. Because betrayal is what he's... I mean, this is just me thinking out loud, so correct me if I'm wrong. The betrayal is the thing that God is addressing, that he's... that's a really... it's more extreme than that. He's not just addressing a problem. This is God coming to earth, dying on a cross. But the issue is there was a betrayal, and the betrayal, and so Judas betraying Jesus highlights that's what God is addressing, that he's not...
I'm about ready to, 100%, okay. Yes.
So it's not just, this is just kind of, I'm thinking about it right now. It's not just, this helps us see, maybe this is it, that the fact that Jesus was betrayed by Judas helps us see that it's not just that God has rules and we have broken them, and so he needs to make up for the rules that we've broken somehow. There were rules, we broke rules, and so something needs to be done about it, but there was relationship, we betrayed, and now he's restoring relationship. He's not just covering up rule violations.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. So if the original sin is rebellion against God, we could go further and say it was rebellion against God by betrayal of relationship.
Right. In Genesis 3, it's betrayal of relationship. Yeah.
Yeah.
In Ezekiel, the passage you're talking about, God portrays it that way. And of course in Hosea it comes up a lot in the prophets that God frames Israel's violation of covenant as relational betrayal, because that's what it is.
Because that's what it is. Yeah. And that's why we want, I think it's really important. It's really, really important that we would talk about the idea of biblical betrayal.
Yeah.
Because in particular, God's involved. And that's going to be a little bit different. It's going to be a little bit different than our idea of betrayal or where I've been betrayed, right? Because Jesus is proof that God has not betrayed us.
Yeah.
Right? God has not betrayed us. He's not turned his back on us. He's about restoring our human betrayal or rebellion of relationship against him, bringing that to completion.
Okay. So, and part of that, again, I'm thinking out loud, part of that issue of the difference between human betrayal and human relationship and betrayal, biblical betrayal, where God is involved, is in a human relationship, there's always two sides to the story. Like you were saying before, well, I've got one perspective, and someone who feels betrayed by me or someone who I feel betrayed me has another perspective, and neither party has handled it perfectly. But in biblical betrayal where God is involved, it's one party did it exactly right and kept the covenant perfectly, and the other party, humanity, human beings, Israel, Adam, me, you, didn't. Right. We betrayed. Yeah.
Yes. And so it doesn't mean, what it doesn't mean is our betrayal is insignificant. the our experience with other humans.
Okay, right.
It doesn't mean it's insignificant,
yes, right.
But it does mean it's only going to find its solution and wholeness in Jesus. It's mm-hmm. only ever going to be restored. It mm-hmm. is spiritual still, I believe. Mm-hmm. It is still spiritual, even though it may be something in some way, shape, or form that I betrayed you. I betrayed you, mm-hmm. but there's still a spiritual mm-hmm. aspect to that that's going to play out because uh-huh. I do believe that when Paul writes in Ephesians that our battle isn't against one another, it's a cosmic forces in the heavenly places,
yeah.
that there is a spiritual aspect to what's going on that can only reach redemption. It can only reach redemption. That betrayal can only be redeemed through Christ. And that's the only way that anything can ever be reconciled and renewed. That's it. Mm-hmm. It's only through Jesus. And so we can go through all the human things that we go through to try and restore a relationship. But at the end of the day—
Sure, those will fall short. They won't be complete without Jesus.
Right, because yeah. it's the picture. It's the model. It's yeah. the perfect picture of bringing redemption through betrayal. And now, I wouldn't have said this a week ago, Tim. I mean, like— It's crazy, right? Like to go Judas, the cross, the story there, it is the Genesis 3 story. And it just once again, just like every week in this series, is confirming Jesus' identity. This week, Jesus is the greater David. He's David, right? I mean, he's the greater David. He's the one from the line of David. He's the promised one. He is the greater David, who's bringing restitution and redemption to humanity's betrayal that's played out through someone that he brought very close, that was entrusted with the money bag, who was entrusted at the very core, who from the get-go, he says, you're a devil.
Yeah.
He knew all along, right? The role was going to play out. There was going to be the betrayer. And so it's just, for me, it's really amazing to see these pieces that are, I've been so familiar with,
uh-huh.
but maybe just a little fresher insight in the same way, like, you know, Barabbas. Barabbas was the name of the criminal,
right?
Who went to the cross. And so we don't have to wonder, you know, hey, Eve, and I don't recommend people read themselves into the story, right? That's not a Bible technique that I recommend because usually when I hear people do that, I don't hear people do it well. But if you were to read yourself into the story of Jesus's crucifixion, we could read ourselves into one character. And it's not whether or not you're Judas and betrayed him, although we could say that. We could say Judas is a prototype of humanity, right?
And sure.
Yeah, he represented humanity yeah. in the original sin of betrayal against God, and it played out through a person. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying one could riff on that. But I am saying that that there's these glimpses of going, okay, that's where I am in the story. And I think people would say, yeah, okay, I get how I've maybe sometime been like Judas with Jesus where I, you know, or hey, I've been like Peter and denied him, or hey, I've done this. But it's not exact, right?
Uh-huh.
But with Barabbas, you're going, okay, if you're going to read yourself into the story, Barabbas was the guilty one who went to the cross, who Jesus gave his actual life for,
mm-hmm.
and Barabbas walked free and uh-huh. got to continue to live on earth until he died of another means.
Yeah.
Who knows? So if you're going to read yourself into that story, you're Barabbas. I'm Barabbas.
Right.
That's who I am. And it's been refreshing for me to sit there and go, oh, humanity is connected to Judas. Like I always like, okay, if you're like, okay, well, am I like Peter? Did I, you know, did I just deny him in the moment? Did I run away with the rest of the people?
Uh-huh.
No, it's like, oh, that's tying all the way back to the Genesis story.
Yeah.
There's none of us who were innocent, but then through the presence of the Satan in the story, it is very clear that it is a cosmic battle. And that the spiritual forces of darkness were actively involved in the death of Jesus.
Yeah.
And that's a greater cosmic battle that's been playing out that a couple years ago, I would have been like, ah, oh, you're crazy.
Yeah. So we are Judas in the story, in a sense that, like, going back to the garden, we as humanity went along with the spiritual forces of evil in their rebellion. We said, yeah, that's a good idea. We'll go your way, and broke relationship, just as Judas does in that moment. Yeah?
Yeah, and I would say, if we were going to look at the story and say, okay, was Judas ever truly a follower of Jesus? The story doesn't portray it that way. I mean, he was in his group of disciples, but it does appear that he wasn't a disciple. Mm. And so you could say, I mean, I'm just riffing now. This could be dead wrong. But I, as I've thought about it, I think you could say, you know, if you were going to say that there's people in the story that represent those who have life in Christ, it would be the 11, and those who don't would be Judas. Mm-hmm. And Judas, we could say, maybe even represented humanity. Mm-hmm. You know, if as we look at it from a biblical theology perspective, he was one person who represented the reality of humanity's betrayal that went back all the way in God's story. One of those themes told over and over again, way back to Adam and Eve. And the result, the original Easter egg that we talked about this weekend, is that there was going to be a snake crusher. That the one who was going to win the final victory would be the one who crushed the snake. And it's just super cool.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Crazy.
This week, quiet waters. So we encouraged people on Monday, hey, take some time. Like, okay, let's combine a couple spiritual disciplines, spiritual practices. Let's combine them together. Set apart a day as we look towards Easter for fasting and silence, solitude, all those combined together in one time. And if Quiet Waters is something that you're going to participate in, you don't have to separate out your experience there, that it's okay for you to say, hey, on Friday, I can find time for solitude, silence, and I'll be fasting, and you can count it.
Yeah, that's one of the good things. I mean, it's one of the things we try and do as a church, but it's one of the things we do specifically in Quiet Waters is, well, we're going to practice this together. Same day, same time, same place, you know? That's one of the cool things about Quiet Waters. We get to practice some disciplines together. And so it's built in. If you're going to Quiet Waters, it's built in this week.
Yeah. And if not, we would encourage you to schedule it. Mm-hmm. And in particular, not just, hey, schedule it. We gave maybe a little bit more guidance to work your way through some questions, to ask Jesus hard questions. You know, who have you betrayed? Who's betrayed you? And how does he want to transform your story in light of that? Whether you are the betrayer or the betrayed, we believe Jesus wants to transform your story. Tim, you got a final word for us? That was a little bit different. That was a lot of talking about
it. I know, it was really different. It's made me totally unprepared for a final word. Have a great week, everybody.
All right, we'll see you.
That's my final word.
Yeah.
Have a great week.
Have a great week. See you.